In the news.
Welcome to In the News. I'm Eric McDaniel.
And I'm Jim Henson.
So this week we want to spend some time talking about the campaign and some more interesting developments that have happened in the state of Texas. But one of the first things coming up is because the Iowa caucus is about a week away, we have some major news in regards to the Democratic Party and their candidates, as well as what's going on with the Republican Party. So the Democrats had a town hall meeting earlier this week, and we saw basically, we see Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders kind of squaring off against each other, trying to differentiate their different styles.
We should mention that Martin O'Malley, the mayor of, former governor of Maryland, or governor, former governor of Maryland, mayor of Baltimore, was there. But we do have a clip of that debate that we can sort of hear what happened between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And what this is a compendium of an exchange between of things that both Clinton and Sanders said on the subject of the Iraq war vote, which has been a major point of differentiation between Clinton and Sanders. So let's see what they had to say in this compendium that moves back and forth because the town hall format had each of them interacting with the audience by themselves in, I think, half hour, 45 minute segments.
The most significant vote and issue regarding foreign policy that we have seen in this country in modern history was the vote on the war in Iraq. Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq.
First of all, I have a much longer history than one vote, which I've said was a mistake.
Experience is important, but judgment is also important.
But I think the American public has seen me exercising judgment in a lot of other ways.
So what you see here is they're both trying to differentiate themselves. And in many ways, this is similar to what you saw in 2008, where Hillary Clinton campaigned on the fact that, you know, she can get things done, she has experience. But the problem was her background experience is being first lady. And so people were like, how much of this is you? How much of this is your president? Whereas Obama talked more about, you know, I'm more ideologically aligned. And so you see this coming back again where you have a clear, who I would actually say is much more, well, Bernie Sanders is much more ideological than Obama. While Obama's being painted as very liberal, he was not as liberal as people make him out to be. Bernie Sanders is as liberal as, you know, they put him out to be. But Hillary Clinton's like, look, you know, ideologically I'm in line with you, but my thing is we have to get things done. And I have made decisions. I have a record to fall back on. And yes, there are some parts of my record that aren't shining. I mean, the same. But Bernie Sanders also has the same thing in regards to guns. So, Jim, what was your take on this?
Well, I thought it was really interesting in the sense that all of the candidates did pretty well, including poor Martin O'Malley. Sanders, in particular, strikes me as such an unlikely but likable candidate. I mean, the first thing he said when he walked out there, the crowds applauding him, and he sits down and he says, well, you know, my wife says I should button my jacket, but I'm too fat. And he just left it. That was a pretty great moment. And I think overall, it was an interesting contrast in tone, and Hillary Clinton was very quick to point this out, between what's going on in the Democratic debate, where they're competitive and there's been some negative ads, but at the same time, it's remained reasonably policy-focused, reasonably about contrast between the candidates, which is very different from what we've seen in the Republican campaign.
Yes, where we're seeing kind of the fireworks being set off again. But we're seeing endorsements beginning to roll out. So last week, the endorsements started with Donald Trump, where he received the endorsement of former Governor Sarah Palin, former vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin, and former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. But he also received some support from the evangelical community, where Jerry Falwell Jr., the I want to say president of Liberty University, endorsed him. Now, it's important to note, Liberty University is where Ted Cruz launched his campaign, and many people had argued that Ted Cruz was the front runner when it came to the evangelical vote. And so to see this is very interesting, considering, you know, Trump's gaffe last week when speaking at Liberty, but still being able to get a prominent evangelical leader to endorse him.
He may be two Corinthians, but he's number one at Liberty University. Is that what we're thinking?
Yes.
Okay. So, and then over on the Cruz side, Cruz also has rolled out some endorsements. There was a little bit of an endorsement deficit Sarah Palin is such a personality in the Republican Party. Of course, Palin endorses Trump, and you immediately get a Saturday Night Live skit out of it. Tina Fey returns to Saturday Night Live. Young people probably don't care about that, but you know, those of us safely ensconced in middle age, you know, this means something. But it, more interesting, in Texas, Ted Cruz rolled out an endorsement from former Governor Rick Perry, which is an interesting dynamic. Rick Perry is a guy who was the longest serving governor in Texas, of course, has not been very successful as a presidential candidate. But Perry is an interesting surrogate for Cruz, even though Cruz, in many ways, is a different generation of Texas Republican than Perry. So let's listen to some of the things that Perry had to say about Cruz as he explained the endorsement on the Fox Business Network earlier this week.
But do you think he can win a general election?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. When you look at Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, whoever the Democrats are going to put forward, there is clearly a time for the American people to take a look at this and say, listen, this is the vision. This is what we want, an America that's safe. We want an America that's back economically principled. We want a country that does allow these states to be competitors. And Ted Cruz, that great believer and quite knowledgeable man of the Constitution, believes in the 10th Amendment.
Now, Perry's a great surrogate for the 10th Amendment, and that's been one of the, for talking about the 10th Amendment, it's been a big theme for Cruz. Perry actually wrote a book about it in advance of his last campaign called Fed Up. And, you know, the title of the book really does underline how Perry, in some ways, did seem like somebody who was riding this wave of discontent we're hearing so much about now. Perry, of course, never quite figured out, but I wanted to impress you because my Rick Perry book is signed.
Ooh.
And you can't really see it. It says, "To Jim, freedom, exclamation point, Rick Perry." Now, the true story is I didn't get that signed myself. It was a gift. But still, it's
Rick
Perry.
The man believes in freedom.
The man does believe in freedom.
And I mean, the 10th Amendment is really big in the state of Texas. One of the things people have argued is when it comes to the state of Texas that they've really focused hard on being the trumpeter for other states, and some would say that the Tea Party states, but because of its size and economic strength, for really pushing back on the 10th Amendment. You see a lot of this in terms of most recently with the battle regarding housing discrimination that the Supreme Court dealt with over the summer, also the fights with the EPA. And in Texas, again, Texas is unique in the sense that no matter who's in power, Texas is going to fight the federal government. Because, you know, it was an independent nation. There's a lot in Texas about the idea of kind of individual liberties and states' rights. And Texas is kind of one of the states at the forefront of this. And because of its prominence in terms of its population, as well as its economic prowess, it's really taken the lead on those issues.
And if you think about what we said last week, we talked about this Texas plan that Governor Abbott has been pushing. There's a lot of continuity between that, Perry's endorsement, Cruz's constitutional thought and his emphasis on states' rights. And there's a sense of trying to grab that terrain in Iowa as the caucuses are coming up. And those caucuses, we've been talking about them for a long time for those that follow politics, and those are coming up Monday. So maybe we ought to explain the caucuses a little bit?
Yes, the caucus is a little bit more in-depth than you see in regular primaries. So caucuses, actually, you don't actually go into a voting booth and vote and leave. What you actually do is you sit there and you talk. And so as we see in the slide that's put forward, so the Democratic caucuses, you have the voters dividing to groups, smaller groups. So they don't need a minimum size. And they combine with groups that favor one of the more popular candidates. And then from there, the delegates for each caucus are then divided proportionally. And so it's kind of a way of working itself up. It's much more of the supporters having a conversation amongst each other and saying, okay, here's who we're going to support in forming these groups. And so it's much more, it requires much more work. Now, the thing about this, because it requires much more work, you have lower turnout in caucuses, and that can be kind of a bit of a drawback. Now, the Democrats is a little bit more complicated. Republicans also have the same caucus in which you have surrogates being highly involved in this process. But what's important to understand when we're talking about the caucus is that it's different than what you see going on in the primary. Now, Texas is interesting in the sense that it has a primary and caucus with the idea being that the only people who can participate in the caucus are those who voted in the primary. So they're referred to the Texas two-step, which became very big and very important in 2008.
Yeah, and they're talking about phasing it out, and because it was so complicated, and in 2008, it was a very interesting dynamic in that once the folks went into that caucus, into the two-step process, Hillary Clinton had won the primary vote, but Barack Obama wound up winning the actual more delegates because they were more organized for this caucus phase, which requires more organization because you have people speaking for the candidates and, in a sense, showing up to the caucuses and trying to persuade others. So that's why, as you see the coverage of Iowa, everybody's talking about organization and ground game in Iowa. That's why caucuses really require this. Another aspect of Iowa, really quickly, that people talk about is Iowa's overall impact on the primary process and whether it should be as big. And one of the arguments is that Iowa doesn't much look like the rest of the United States. So if we look at the characteristics of Iowa, particularly demographics, compared to the United States, much smaller Black and Hispanic population, and that's really the thing that people emphasize. Right now, Iowa actually has a somewhat lower unemployment rate than the country overall. Nonetheless, the differences in demographics, particularly racial and ethnic demographics, have made people call Iowa into question. And I think there's another dynamic now being added to that, because it looks like there's a possibility that Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz, or even, you know, Donald Trump in this context, could win Iowa. So much of the discussion that's been going on in elite circles in the parties have been about whether they should really take on Iowa and, by extension, also New Hampshire, and kind of knock them out of those early positions in the primary process. These arguments are part of it. Now we're seeing it buttressed by the argument that if the process seems to cater to candidates from the wings, that the far wings of the party, maybe it should change.
Yeah, and this has been one of the major issues with primaries, is that the people most likely to vote in primaries are the extreme partisans. And the problem is you get the extreme partisans in Iowa and New Hampshire, two states that don't really look like the rest of the U.S. So I think one study said that Ohio looked most like the rest of the U.S. But the problem is that the Ohio primary is much later on, and so the states that are much more reflective and probably have much more delegates, they get pushed to the back. But the problem is you win the first couple, you get the ball rolling, everybody sees you as a winner. But the problem is you're winning, you know, people could say kind of minor states. Well, not that Iowa and New Hampshire are not important. They are extremely important states.
You're going to get a lot of mail for that.
Yes. But at the same time, these are states that don't reflect the larger population. And so they may be somewhat of anomalies as opposed to the norm.
Okay, so speaking of larger states, Texas was in the news this week because of this the Planned Parenthood case. Houston grand jury had been examining the case of two anti-abortion activists that had gone and run these sort of stings at different places in the country, Planned Parenthood facilities at different places in the country. And the grand jury indictment had really, many people thought, been the result, or the grand jury investigation had been the result of pressure from the lieutenant governor, whose purpose really was to get Planned Parenthood indicted for dealing illegally in fetal tissue. And this has been a huge national political issue. Also made the New York Times this week. This is the kind of thing the New York Times loves to have Texas in the news for. But it was a very unexpected outcome when the grand jury actually indicted the activists rather than anybody at Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, I mean, the New York Times only comes to Texas for barbecue and then talking about crazy stories. When things go right in Texas, we're never in the news. And this is important because it really speaks to what we see coming out of the Fifth Amendment, which we'll talk about some more when we move on to civil rights and civil liberties. But the idea that, you know, when the grand jury met, it was to go over all the facts. And in going over all the facts, they came to the conclusion that Planned Parenthood had done nothing wrong. However, the two individuals, the two activists, had committed fraud, which is a felony. So by using fake IDs, fake California IDs, but then also attempting to purchase, the leader of the two activists attempting to purchase human tissue. And in the state of Texas, you don't need to actually have set up a transaction. Just the attempt to purchase it is a misdemeanor. So they have one felony, one misdemeanor. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. And again, as I think it's important to point out, there's still several other cases dealing with Planned Parenthood right now, pending in the state of Texas.
Yeah, well, what's happened in some of the other parts of the country, the investigations of Planned Parenthood, I think 10 other states, have been somewhat quietly shut down. Those were mainly in states that have Republican governors. In Texas, one of Governor Abbott's first responses was to say that we still have state investigations going on completely aside from the grand jury. So I think we're going to continue to see the politics line up the way they do in Texas. There's a very strong partisan frame here. Republicans were more likely to have a negative view of Planned Parenthood than Democrats. Democrats have a much higher view of Planned Parenthood than Republicans. When you ask about approval, and we've done some polling on this at the UT Texas Tribune poll, I think one thing that we are going to see, though, is that this is going to be seen as something of a victory for Planned Parenthood. And while it probably won't change Republican attitudes very much, it'll probably help shore up a little bit of the decrease in Democratic approval we had seen for Planned Parenthood in the wake of all these accusations that Planned Parenthood was allegedly, you know, dealing in fetal tissue, which, even if you're pro-choice, has kind of a negative connotation.
Yeah, and this is a really important story because you had the story a couple years ago of the doctor in Pennsylvania, who was running an abortion clinic, was committing all kinds of atrocities. And for people who support, who are pro-choice, as well as people who are pro-life, you know, you want to make sure that if this is being done, it's being done right. And even more so on the pro-choice side, because, you know, this is something that you're sticking to, and you're saying, no, this is a good thing, but you want to make sure it's done right. And so if you are going to support, you want to make sure that the people you are supporting are doing what you believe they're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of complexities in attitudes towards abortion.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we'll highlight as the class goes on. But for now, that's all we have. Enjoy your week, and we'll be here next week for In the News.